How's it going, everybody? Welcome to That Time of the Week. I am your host, Matthew Morgan, and today we are going to talk about some football. So there's quite a bit that's been happening in terms of football. There's also, as far as, I guess, FIFA. So Darius Slay, the, multiple-time All-Pro. I mean, the man's got a Super Bowl ring as well. Darius Slay is contemplating retirement, and he says he will not report to the Bills. So he was waived by the Steelers, and he was signed by the Bills. I picked up off the waiver wire, however you want to phrase that.
Fair enough, I guess. But, I think that it's upsetting that Darius Slay's retiring, but I mean, he's certainly not been like the prime Darius Slay, you know.
I mean, when he was at the Lions, he was one of the, if not the best corner in the NFL. I don't know, because I mean, I guess you had like, I mean, I don't know, Jaire Alexander was, you know. Anyways, I mean, you have competition, obviously. But, I mean, Darius Slay was one of the best corners in the NFL, and then he got into, I guess, some kind of dispute with Matt Patricia, the former head coach of the Lions at the time. They shipped him to the Eagles, where Darius Slay won a Super Bowl, and maybe two Super Bowls. I don't know, the Eagles have two Super Bowls, but anyways, so Slay won a Super Bowl, with the Eagles, and he said at the end of last year, I do believe, after winning the Super Bowl, that he did not want to, that he was going to play one more year in the NFL, and he wanted it to be with either the Lions or the Eagles, because those were the two teams he'd played with prior. He was drafted to the Lions, won a Super Bowl with the Eagles. I'm surprised he played for the Steelers at all, I'll be honest. I mean, I figured that if he didn't go to one of the two teams, he probably would have retired, so I'm surprised that he played at all. Now, the Steelers have waived, like I said, they did waive Darius Slay. Which, by the way, they waived Darius Slay in exchange for Adam Thielen, I do believe it was. Adam Thielen. I don't know how good Adam Thielen is at this point, but I had faith in Darius Slay to be better than Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen's okay, I guess, but I'd rather have Darius Slay. But, should Darius Slay not report back to the Bills, he might have to pay back a portion of the $8.75 million signing bonus. Even though the Bills never actually paid any of it, I guess according to the NFL, the signing bonus represents advanced compensation for future services, and failing to provide those services exposes the player to losing some of that compensation. So even though the Lions have never paid him the signing bonus, he might have to pay back some of the signing bonus because the signing bonus is for future. I don't know. I find that interesting. I mean, I understand you have to pay it back if, like, you got a signing bonus for a team and then, like, retired right off the rip. You just retired with, like, you know, almost a $9 million bonus on the way out. So, I mean, I guess that makes sense, but they never actually paid any of it, so I don't know why he'd have to pay back some money that was never paid to him to begin with. But, I don't know, that's neither here nor there, I suppose. Also, they asked him if he, because like I said, he said that he would not report to the Bills. He let the Bills know that he would not be reporting to the team. He refused to say whether or not he would have reported to the Eagles, should the Eagles have picked him up off the waiver wire. I think he would have, personally. He wanted to play one more season with either the Eagles or the Lions. But nobody asked him about the Lions, which I thought was interesting. He said he wanted to play, like I said, one last season for either the Eagles or the Lions. And they asked him about the Eagles. They did not ask him about the Lions. Don't know what's up with that, but maybe they just assume the Lions don't want him.
Speaking of the Lions, Jahmyr Gibbs and Barry Sanders, both of them are Lions running backs, are tied for most touchdowns before turning 24 at the before turning 24 years old, and they're both at 47 touchdowns. You know, I think that's always good to have to be breaking records, especially to be compared with the person. I don't know. I guess Adrian Peterson is also in the conversation a lot of the times, but Barry Sanders is considered the best running back of all time. Usually, like I said, I mean, Adrian Peterson's in the conversation as well. Maybe a couple other people. Saquon, when he retires, probably will be up in there. But I like Adrian Peterson better personally. But I saw Adrian Peterson play, so I'm biased. Never saw Barry Sanders. Anyways, Jahmyr Gibbs and Barry Sanders are both tied at 47 touchdowns for most touchdowns before turning 24. And I think that that's especially, I don't know, impressive, I suppose. Seeing as for the first, I want to say 2 or 3 years. I don't remember the exact timeline. But for the first 2 or 3 years of Jahmyr Gibbs being on the Lions, he split carries with David Montgomery. So, I mean, 47 touchdowns. I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, obviously you're in the... you're in conversation with you know, the best running back in NFL history, arguably. And also, the season's not over yet. So if he gets one more touchdown, he breaks that record. And he's going to be the running back with the most touchdowns before turning 24 at 48. If he scores another touchdown this season, which I find likely. He's probably the best running back in the NFL as of currently. I mean, Bijan Robinson was up there last year, but I don't know, it changes. But Jahmyr Gibbs is doing incredible this year. I think it's interesting that the Lions have both of them, though. And also, I think it's especially interesting because I'm pretty sure David Montgomery had something like 35 touchdowns his 2 or 3 years at the Lions. So to have 47 touchdowns before 24 while sharing snaps with somebody who got something like 35 touchdowns, I mean, the Lions must have been running the ball like crazy. But there's that. Anyways, 47 touchdowns is a lot. And now something I found interesting personally. I don't know necessarily how important it'll be for now, but the NFL is entering into a partnership with the Big 12, like the NCAA program, I guess, or conference, I guess is a better way to put it. But anyways, they're entering into a partnership with the Big 12 to work, quote, work side by side. On officiating development, global football initiatives, emerging technology, analytics, and flag football expansion with a goal of growing the game for generations to come. The NFL announced via Tom Pelissero of NFL Media. The focus on officiating is notable. Big 12 officials will gain access to NFL clinics, weekly teaching tapes, and advanced accountability tools. Joint training and evaluation programs will expand, and both organizations will collaborate to identify officials with pro potential. Again, via Tom Pelissero. And I just thought that was fascinating, because I think it was either last year or the year before, maybe both, I couldn't tell you. But, I remember, because it was around the Super Bowl time, but anyways, I remember that Roger Goodell came out and said that the officiating had never been better in the NFL. And this was in response to a lot of people complaining that the officiating in the NFL has never been worse. So, you know, of course he's going to come out and say that it's never been better. He also, he did say that, yes, there were some mistakes that have been made, but, you know, the referees are never going to be, you know, 100% accurate. They're people. People make mistakes. That kind of thing. And I do believe the number was something like 46,000 plays a year that they you know, call, they ref, I suppose. Officiate. There you go. Officiate. But I think it's interesting that the NFL partnered with the Big 12. I mean, not necessarily because it's the Big 12. I mean, you could have just partnered with any of the... I'm sure it'll expand at some point, by the way. I don't see this just the Big 12. I assume the Big 10 will get in on it, and at the very least, most of the big conferences will, I think, at some point or another, get in on this. But again, I don't know what the NFL is giving the Big 12 per se. I mean, I know they have access to all the things that I just read off. But I think it's interesting that the Big 12 is going to willingly become a pipeline for refs. I guess it works out for the NFL though, because I mean they're training referees to get better. Essentially, they're training referees in the Big 12, so they're training referees on the dollar of the Big 12 to at some point bring to the NFL to be referees on the pro level, which is interesting. But also, I think that if the officiating had never been better in the NFL, they probably would have never done this. Because why would you? The officiating's never been better. Obviously, it's getting better without any of this. Why would you invest money into it? That's just my thought. But I think that Roger Goodell lied. I mean, personally. There's a reason that at the draft every year, when Roger Goodell gets up on stage, he's booed by the audience. It's a tradition at this point that Roger Goodell just leans into. I guess he thinks it's funny, or at the very least, he acts like he thinks it's funny. Even during COVID, when you didn't have the draft in person, they still wanted to keep the whole booing of Roger Goodell. So they had a whole bunch of fans from I don't know where exactly, but they had cameras set up so when Roger Goodell came on stage, they could broadcast the crowd to the TV and then have the TV the crowd on the TV boo. So I mean, they for whatever reason felt it necessary to keep the booing in. But I guess, you know, the NFL just sees it as tradition at this point. You got to boo with the commissioner. I want to know the history of that, but I can look into that for some other time. But yes, I think that if Roger Goodell genuinely believed that the officiating had never been better, he probably wouldn't have done this. Now, I assume it does have something to do with sports gambling. I mean, sports gambling, I mean, we're from Ohio, so it's fairly new around here. I don't know where we're all it's, I don't know where all it's been active at for a long time, per se. But, anyways, it would seem that the ability to bet on the games has certainly... I would assume at least played a part into this because, I mean, you know, now, because there have always been bad calls in the NFL, but they didn't really, I don't want to say they didn't really do anything. I mean, a bad call could change the outcome of the game, but, I mean, there wasn't money riding on the game. I'm sure somebody had money, you know, there's always been illegal gambling, but, now I guess there's concerns about, I mean, Roger Goodell did not say this, so there's that. But I would assume it has something to do with the sports betting for the sheer fact that, you know, there is the potential that you could have a ref who takes a bribe or has a bet in on the game himself. And same thing for a player. I mean, it's just like the two pitchers from the Guardians who allegedly were, throwing bad pitches at the behest of gamblers, because you can bet per pitch in baseball, so there's that. Now, that is, like I said, alleged. I mean, they haven't been found guilty or anything. It's just they've been charged. And there's the I can't remember. I want to say the Trailblazers, but I could be wrong. There was a coach in the NBA who had apparently... a coach and a couple of players, I think, who had, all on the same team, by the way, who had connections to the, it sounds crazy, but, apparently they were connected to, like a multi-million dollar, mafia gambling operation. So if that's true, I mean, you know, they've been match-fixing in the NBA, at least one team has, for long enough for the FBI to get involved. Which I think is interesting. You know, I figured that if I made millions of dollars to play basketball or football or anything, why do I need to place bets? What are the extra couple, like, $1,000 gonna do for me? Like, honestly, you could win a couple $1,000, but also you could lose your job. You know, anyways, I mean, that's just a personal thing, I suppose. But it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, I understand that gambling addiction is a thing, and that people have, you know, I guess issues with that kind of thing. But gosh, I mean, like I said, the Guardian, like, two pitchers on the Guardians have been charged with, I don't know exactly what they've been charged with, match fixing, maybe. But yeah. So, I mean, it's certainly, you know, there, and it's only going to get more relevant as gambling becomes more popular. But yeah, so I forgot where I would, how I even started that. But yeah, Roger Goodell has invested into the Big 12 referees so that way he can steal them and make them NFL officials. Well, you know, NFL referees, however you want to phrase that. Also, as of last week, I felt the need to mention this because I thought it was fascinating. Brandon Aubrey, the kicker for the Cowboys, he broke two records in the game against the Lions. Now, the Lions did win the game, and the Cowboys lost, but Brandon Aubrey didn't care. Brandon Aubrey was going crazy. So he has the most field goals of 55-plus yards in a single game now. I apparently didn't write down how many. I think it's four. I don't know. I don't remember. But most field goals of 60-plus yards in a season at three field goals of 60-plus yards in a season. And most field goals of 60-plus yards in a career, which he already held before the start of the season. But he has hit two more 60-yarders at this point. So he now has the number one most field goals of 60-plus yards in a career at six. Which is kind of crazy, because I don't know who's behind him. Because he had the record at four last year. And now he's at six. So, I don't know. I think that's interesting. I think Brandon Aubrey's probably the best kicker in the NFL right now. Justin Tucker fell off. Which is interesting. I mean, kickers can last a long time. Justin Tucker's still young, I do believe. I think he's got the yips. I think they refer to them as the yips. But, yeah. And by the way, Justin Tucker is, in fact, not young. I mean, he's not old. I mean, you know, we had Adam Vinatieri. He was a kicker until, like, 42 or something. Justin Tucker is 36 now. So, and a free agent. That's crazy. He's not even on a team. Wait. It says that he's a free agent, but it also says that he plays for the Ravens. So, I don't know what's up with that. But, because I know he got some Deshaun Watson kind of allegations at one point or another. Why does it say Browns? But, anyways, yeah, so I think that it'll be, yeah, so I guess he is a free agent, because he tried out for the Colts not long ago. Interesting. But, yeah, so Justin Tucker, I mean, you know, you'll have that. But, I think that Cam Little could probably do it. He's only been in the NFL for 2 years now, but his rookie year, he made a 68-yard field goal, and that's the NFL record. So, I mean, he also kicked a 70-yarder in preseason, but, you know, preseason stats don't count, so it's not a record. It's a preseason record, I guess. But, yeah, regular season stats don't count, so the record is 68. which, by the way, before that, I think it was 64, maybe 65. So 68 is considerable gap there. And Justin Tucker had the 64-yarder, I want to say it was. So, yeah, I mean, I think they ought to have to do something about the kicking or the field goals here soon. You know, I think there's a problem because, like, if you have kickers who can kick 70-yard field goals, and it gets to a point where you can just consistently kick 70-yard field goals, the new NFL's... So, when I started watching the NFL... I don't know how it's always been, I'll be honest. But when I started watching the NFL and you kicked, you know, obviously as soon as the ball was kicked, the people ran from both sides. But you could fair catch it like you can now, but a fair catch would only put you at the 20. And at some point they decided that four player, because if you ran out, players almost always got to the 25. So if you ran out, you were almost, you know, guaranteed to some extent, an extra 5 yards. But if you fair caught it, you were at the 20. And then they changed it at some point to make it to where if you fair caught it, you would get put at the 25, because most carryouts get put at the or most return attempts get put at the 25 end up at the 25 anyways. And then they decided that, you know, we like the XFL's kickoff system, and it's the UFL now, but, anyways, they stole the UFL's kickoff system. It might have been the XFL at the time, but, I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, it's not bad, I guess, but I think it's unfortunate that now so they went from the 20 to the 25 under the same kickoff system, went to a whole new kickoff system, went from the 25 to the 30. So now if you fair catch it, I guess you can't fair catch it. You have to return it. If it hits in the end zone, though, it puts you at the 30. That's what it is. It's a touchback rule. Anyways. So if you get a kick and it ends in the end zone and that's a touchback, you start at the 30, which means you have, 100 field is 120 yards. 100 yards is the actual field, and then the end zones are 10 each. So 120 yards. So you have 80 yards to get to the field goal. So if you drive for 15 yards, I mean, right there, 65-yarder, boom, 3 points. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. If you can have kickers that can kick 70-yarders, 68 yards by a rookie kicker is insane. I mean, it's getting to a point when they kick a ball in the NFL, I have no, like, I'm genuinely not concerned at all. They don't miss in the NFL, because if you miss, you're fired. Like, kickers are the most expendable position in the NFL. Now, are they useful? Yeah, I mean, as a matter of fact, some of the top scorers every year are kickers because, you know, it's 3 points a field goal, 1 point for a PAT. PATs are pretty much give-me's. Most field goals are pretty much give-me's for NFL level. I can't kick at all, so when I say give-me's, I mean for them, not me. But, like, you know, you miss two... I don't know. I don't want to say that because I think... Cam Little went 27 for 29 his rookie year, which was incredible. So there's that. But, like, if you miss, you don't really have to miss all that many field goals, or you miss, like, one crucial moment field goal. Like, Eddie Pinheiro. Eddie Pinheiro was fine for the Bears, in my opinion. Eddie Pinheiro missed that field goal. I don't remember who they were playing against. I want to say the Eagles, but I don't know that that's the truth. They missed a field goal. Because there was a pass deflection, and there is that, by the way. They missed the field goal, and it wasn't even the kicker's fault, I guess. I mean, I'm sure he could have done something differently, angled it higher, maybe. But one of the defenders on the line jumped up, and it tipped his finger, and it changed the trajectory of the ball. So he got fired because there was a tipped ball. So it wasn't even like he made a bad kick. I mean, he just got fired because they lost the playoff game. No, I'm sure that there was something behind the scenes, but I don't know. All I know is that Eddie Pinheiro got fired because he missed a kick in the playoffs. And he didn't even really miss the kick, like I said. I mean, you know, because it was a deflection. So I guess he missed the kick in theory. But that was a good play by the defender, not a bad play by him. So if you can just get fired for a good play by somebody else, then, you know, I mean, you got to be expendable. I mean, there used to be a thought that running backs were expendable. I mean, because, like Todd Gurley, for example. They gave Todd Gurley so much money when he was on the Rams, and Todd Gurley was one of the best running backs in the NFL when he was on the Rams, and then Todd Gurley tore his ACL or something. I don't remember exactly. He hurt his knee, one of his knees. And he came back, and he was not the same. And then he got traded to the Falcons. And now he doesn't play, I don't think. If he's on a team, he's second or third string. I haven't heard the name Todd Gurley up until... it's been a long time up until tonight. So, yeah, I mean, running backs kind of get gypped on a lot of money because you I don't want to say it doesn't take a lot of skill, because I always feel like I'm dogging on the NFL players when I say that. But, like, you know, in reality, if you're one of the fastest people in the country, and you're small enough to hit holes and quick enough to avoid people, honestly, you'd be an alright running. I mean, you might not be a Hall of Famer, but, like, I mean, you really only need, like, you know, 4 yards a carry. And even not then. I mean, you could probably get, like, 3.3 yards a carry, and you'll be a backup. So, like, you know, burst is really all you need. I mean, it's nice to have the whole ball carrier vision and all that, but, I don't know. A lot of running backs get a lot of extra yards. Because, I mean, if you don't have a line as a running back, you're pretty much done. I mean, if you're hiking the ball and the defensive line is right there, then, you know, what are you going to do? So, I mean, I don't know. Running backs are having a comeback, though, so that's always good. I think that the game is evolving once again. I mean, tight ends used to be blockers, and then you would just run the ball. And then at some point, they said, what if we threw the ball? And then at some point, throwing the ball was the game. Like, air raid offense used to be a big thing. I guess it still is to some extent. But now you use the running back a lot more, and you hit him with play action. You know, it's interesting. And also, at some point, you weren't even allowed to lateral the ball. I remember when we were talking about on this day in history at one point in time, and there was an on this day in history, they made basically they made throwing the ball legal in the NFL. So it apparently was not even allowed to throw the ball for a while. We were straight up playing like some kind of weird version of rugby. I don't know if rugby came out first or what, but anyways, we were playing some like rugby kind of game. And then they decided that if you could throw the ball, it'd add a new element of speed and athleticism to the game, and boy, were they right. Now they got people in the NFL running, like, 4.22s and stuff, and 4.3s. I mean, that's fast, you know, fast people. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Matt, I remember if you pushed the guy from behind to get him in the end zone, that was a penalty.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know, nowadays, you know, they're pushing people, you know, not only at the touchdown line, but, you know, out in the field, too. But at one time, that was a penalty, you know, if you did that. Or accidentally did it, you know what I'm saying?
Now, I can't remember who did it, but there was actually a defense that, I assume you're talking about the tush push, by the way, the quarterback sneak. But there was actually a defense that ran something very similar to the to the tush push, in order to stop a quarterback sneak or something. I don't remember exactly what they were using it for, but it was deemed that it was they basically illegalized it because of due to player safety. But they didn't ban it for the off, because there was a vote at the beginning of this year before the season started to ban the tush push.
But it didn't pass.
It did not pass. And the reasoning being is, I mean, a lot of teams, or a lot of people just felt like the teams that that wanted it banned because essentially they couldn't stop it and they couldn't run it. But, I mean, there are, like, you know, If you, like, the Eagles run the tush-push a lot. If you talk to any of the members on the offensive line of the Eagles, you know, you run the tush-push, like, 3-4 times because of the way they block. Because, you know, usually you're up, but, like, they are, like, flat. They're using, like, their head as spears pretty much. So, you know, you put a lot of tension on your neck and shoulders that way. And, you know, after, like, 4 times of doing that, you know, you have, you know, you're not quite excited to run it a 5th time.
Well, if they're using their head like that, I would, you know, agree with...
Well, that's why I don't even know how it's legal, because, like, I mean, they all just, like, keep their head down, the quarterback, or the center hikes the ball, and then they all just, like, fall forward and push. I mean, that's my understanding. They it's called...
Especially the quarterback, you know.
Yeah.
And Brady used to be good at that.
You know, I have a lot of respect for Tom Brady, because Tom Brady at one point, he went on a, I don't know that you could call it a rant, but he at one point said that he felt the game was going too soft. Because, I mean, he talked about when he played, like, he talked about playing the Ravens when they had Ray Lewis. And he was like, you know, I mean, if you had a wide receiver who was open in the middle of the field, you wouldn't throw it to him because because Ray Lewis was there. You threw it in Ray Lewis's direction, you were going to lose a player, and you couldn't afford to lose a good player. So he said you had to work around the people. Basically, he was just saying that the quarterback had a lot of duty to keep the wide receiver safe. And, you know, you just don't throw it to players who could do stuff like that. I mean, like, he avoided Ray Lewis when they played Ray Lewis.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, I don't know if I'd want to be a receiver. You know, you catch that ball.
Oh, I wouldn't want to be a receiver.
And sometimes you get clocked.
Could you imagine running 30 yards downfield just to catch a ball and then have some dude who's, like, you know, 100 pounds bigger than you lay you out? Like, do that consistently for years at a time? I don't know about all that.
Yeah, that would... I would rather play running back before I play receiver.
Well, I don't know. I think running backs really start to fall off. I don't want to say fall off a cliff, but they start to degrade at, like, 28. I mean, I guess wide receivers do as well. But, I mean, running backs have a harder job because running backs are small. I mean, they're usually, like, 5'8 to, like, 5'11. And you're running into dudes that are, like, 6'7, 350 pounds and, like all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that, a little bit of that, you know. And I think the players, in a way, shouldn't be allowed to stay in there for long times because concussions and stuff like that, you know. If you play 10 years, it ought to be mandatory retirement, you know, because why, I don't understand them when they get paid that much, why they want to continue to play the game and take a chance on getting hurt.
Well, I actually, funnily enough, you brought this up, because I didn't feel the need to add it to the list of topics to talk about, but the University of North Carolina actually recently did a study, and they saw no correlations between the length of time football was played and the health of the player after the fact. By the way, it was a study of like 1,500 former NFL players. And they said that the single most determining factor on a person's health after the game is how many concussions they've had. How much head, you know, collision
yeah.
with their head.
But they do a lot better job of, you know, these days.
Well, I think so. I mean,
concussion protocol. You know, back in the day, you know, they was never worried about concussions.
Well, I don't remember who it was, but there was a former, man, I wish I could remember who it was. There was a former wide receiver, I think he played for the Cowboys, I think it might have been Michael Irving, I don't remember. But, you know, he basically said that when he played football, you know, you'd get hit, and you'd hit the ground, like, you know, he said that, like, it was encouraged, like, you know how you can't hit defenseless receivers now? Like, if they're, like, jumping in the ball or in the air for a ball, you can't... Like,
it was encouraged back in
the
day.
Yeah, and he was like, look, the ball didn't even have to be there. You could get laid out by the defender. They wanted the defender to lay you out at that point.
Yeah.
And
the coaches, you know, would tell the players, this guy, put him out of the game.
Yeah.
And that's not allowed anymore.
He said you'd get up seeing stars, and then you know what you'd do? You'd get up, and you'd run back out to the huddle.
Dick Butkus, one time I heard him talking, and he said back in his day, if you got hurt, you didn't let on that you was hurt, because, you know, you got back in the huddle and, you know, and ready to go again, because he said if you let them know you was hurt, then they're going to prey on you. To really hurt you and get you out of that game.
Well, I mean, I think there's still some of that. I mean, I don't think coaches really encourage it anymore. But I can't remember who it was. But a few years ago, a coach got in trouble for a smash for cash. I think that's what they call it. When essentially just, you know, you hurt this player and I'll pay you.
Yeah, I remember hearing something like that. Is Belichick still with North Carolina?
He is, but I there are rumors that he's going to go to the Giants because the Giants fired Brian Daboll. I wouldn't mind seeing him go to the Giants. I mean, the Giants beat, or, you know, the Giants beat Tom Brady and Bill Belichick twice in the Super Bowl. So I think that'd be interesting.
Belichick talking on TV that, you know, that was, he was not going to coach anymore, and then I'm watching him. You know, games in North Carolina, and he was still there, and I was saying, huh, are these repeats? They can't be repeats.
Yeah.
So, I thought he was still there.
Well, I do think that he's probably not pleased with how he's done in the NCAA. I mean, he's only been there a year. I mean, it's hard to build a team in a year. I mean, you got to have, like, recruiting classes and all that. But I don't think he's all that pleased, and I don't think that UNC's all that pleased with him. I think there is a fair chance that at the end of the season, should the Giants offer him a job, he's going to go to the Giants. I mean, they asked him.
Old. Why does he want to?
Why not? I mean, I thought when he was done with the Patriots, he was done. I mean, the man went to UNC. I mean, he was going to be the Falcons were looking at him to make him a head coach. I thought he was done when the Falcons didn't take him. And then he went to UNC.
He's got that young girlfriend. He ought to retire and do some traveling and enjoy his life.
What? I think that when you do something for as long as Bill Belichick has in football, I mean, it's probably hard to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, you do something every day for, you know, like something like, I don't know. I don't know how long he's been involved in football, at least 40 years. I mean, he was the head coach of the Browns forever ago.
Yeah, it'd be hard to take it out of your life, really. You know, like Tony Romo, one nice thing about Tony is that he retired, but he still wasn't. And some, you know, a lot of players sometimes do that. They're still in the game as announcers, or
you know,
they have shows where they sit on. They talk about the, you know, the players. And
speaking
the
of
and
players
stuff.
Who are on a show now, my favorite player, former player that's on a show now, has got to. Well, I like to watch Tom Brady. I got, cause he's like an announcer for the games when they're actually going on. But like post games, I don't know if you've ever watched any of the post game stuff. But my favorite post game analyst is Richard Sherman. By far, I mean, that man goes in on people. I mean, I have a quote here from George about George Pickens, and I mean, it just goes on. And George Pickens
Sherman
even responded.
Used to be wonderful cornerback.
Oh,
you
I
know,
yeah.
You couldn't hardly get a completion with Sherman, but that only lasted, a couple, 3 years.
Well, I mean, he also, Richard Sherman was one of the best corners in the NFL at that point, but also, I mean, he did have the Legion of Boom behind him. I don't know if you remember the Legion of Boom, but, I mean, you had, like, Cam Chancellor, and you had Bobby Wagner, and you had Richard Sherman. You had all these people who would just absolutely blow people up. Like, so, I mean, he had one heck of a defense around him.
Yeah. Is he retired now, Sherman?
Yes, Richard Sherman, yeah, he retired.
Yeah. Well, that's good for him.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, he didn't look too great his last couple of years. I think he redeemed himself in the Super Bowl, though.
Yeah, and I don't know why people, you know, do that sometimes. They play past their, you know, they're not contributing as doing as well. And sometimes if you play those extra 2 or 3 years and look bad, that's all people will remember you for.
Well, I don't know that I can. I mean, now, I mean, obviously, you know, we've talked about how, you know, money isn't everything and all that kind of thing. But, I mean, you know, If I'm Richard Sherman, I'm sure there was a point that Richard Sherman realized he was slipping, and I'm sure there was a point that he realized he wasn't the best corner in the NFL anymore. But, you know, if I'm Richard Sherman and I have people like the 49ers coming and offering me a bag to play corner, why would I? I mean, like, make me one of the highest paid corners in the NFL as a mediocre corner at this rate. I mean, the name Richard Sherman could get you paid.
You know, so many of them should just retire, and it's, a lot of them sink money into this, give money away, you know, and then later on they're broke when the money ain't coming in.
Well, speaking of money, like Myles Garrett. I guess we found out what Myles Garrett's real. Well, I don't know. I don't want to bash on Myles Garrett. I have nothing against Myles Garrett. But, I mean, I guess we found out what Myles Garrett really cares about. I mean, he said that he wanted to leave the Browns to go chase the Super Bowl because he feels like he's not going to be in his prime much longer, which is probably true. I mean, he's, you know, 28, I think. So, I mean...
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah, but he ended up... the Browns ended up coming back and offering him, like, a four-year, like, four... like a... I don't remember exactly what the extension is, but they made $40 million extension or something like that. So, I mean, they paid him, and then all of a sudden he was like, oh, yeah, cool, I'll stay in Cleveland.
Well, you know, I probably would have, too, for that kind of money, but when he gets it, you know,
I don't know,
like that,
you know,
I mean,
I could not imagine going to the NFL, like, you know, if you're going to play college football... Like, if you're going to make it to college, I mean, you have to have some kind of killer mentality. I mean, you have to really hate losing. I mean, nobody likes to lose, but, I mean, you have to really hate losing. I mean, you have to have a killer mentality. I could not imagine going to the NFL, going to the Browns, and being there through all... You lose all the time. I mean, like, the Browns went, like, 1-15, like, 2-3 years in a row at one point in time.
I don't know what it is. They've had good coaches and good players. Heck, Belichick used to be with the Browns at one time.
I have my own personal theory. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know the name of the Browns owner. I don't even know if the Browns have. I mean, I'm sure the Browns have an owner, but I don't know if they have like a, you know, like a whole board or whatever. But I think personally that the Browns owner really doesn't care. I mean, I do know that the Browns have the youngest GM in the NFL. I think he's 32. So the
owner used to be some old lady.
Well, the owner might still be an old lady. I don't know who owns it. But the general manager is 32. Like I said, youngest general manager in the NFL. So there's that. I don't know how long he's been the general manager of the Browns. I can't imagine for long at 32, though. But I think personally that the owner of the Browns just doesn't really care how they do. Because people show, like, I mean, I went to 3 Browns games this year. I mean, people still show up for the Browns games. And the Browns won, like, I mean, I think they have, like, 4 wins this year.
They're still making money, so...
Yeah, I mean, they still make profit, so I don't think they really care.
Yeah. Well, I'll get off here, Matt. It's about time for you to go home.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for calling.
Yep, see you, Matt.
Have a good one. Alrighty, well, yeah, I probably don't have time to read the full thing, but George Pickens, this is from Richard Sherman, George Pickens throughout the game, especially late in the game, just looked uninterested in playing football. That's what you can't have. If you're going to be a superstar, if you want to be the best receiver in the NFL, you can't be disengaged. It doesn't matter if the game's going your way or not going your way. You can't just disappear in these games or else you're not going to have impact. You're the guy. CeeDee Lamb is not in the game. He's out. He had a concussion. He was pulled with a concussion. You can't be the guy and give 50%. By the way, I cleaned that up. He said some expletives. You can't be the guy and give 50%. I'm sorry. It's unacceptable. And if you are the Dallas Cowboys and you're looking at him and you're looking to pay him big time receiver money, $40 million, you got to look at this tape and say, hey, is this a guy we can trust paying $40 million to show up regardless of circumstances? And I don't know. That coming from Richard Sherman in the post-game interview, post-game show, I guess. It's not really an interview. But post-game show on the Fox, I do believe the Fox Network. I could be wrong about the network. But, yeah. So Richard Sherman, my favorite of the announcers. I mean, he goes after people. He went after the Giants announcer, the Giants GM at one point in time after firing Dable. Richard Sherman unhappy with George Pickens. I figured I'd throw that in there. But I appreciate everybody for listening. Hope everybody has a wonderful night. Stay warm, and I hope you enjoy the holidays more than I guess I do. Have a good one. When out on the lawn there rose